NWP Radio.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project.
NWP.
Hello, friends. Guess what? Punk Sutani, our woodchuck friend, predicted a longer winter. And March, though, came in as a lion and is going out like a lamb. Of course, that's here in the Northeast in Connecticut. And the peepers are singing their frogalicious songs tonight in love and anticipation of April showers and May flowers. So regardless of where you are, however, I'm hoping that a bit of spring has sprung in your step and optimism and hope are somewhere near your horizon. We're thrilled tonight to have two incredible human beings with us at the National Writing Project as we continue the celebration of writers of children's and young adult literature and the possibilities their books have for our classrooms. Hey, Tanya, the sun shining out west right now?
Well, you know, as a Maine girl transplanted to California, I think the sun's shining here all the time. It's gorgeous. More importantly, when this airs, it will be Poetry Month. And that is the thing I'm totally looking forward to and thrilled that we can kick it off with a conversation with Ann Berg about her newest novel written in verse. I'm really excited. I know you told me that our friend Kwame introduced you to Ann's work, and we talked to Kwame last month about becoming Muhammad Ali. And then you reminded me that's how we knew Ann, and it was perfect that she would be our author featured for April. So we're so excited.
It all started with this book right here, All the Broken Pieces, which was written in and published, I should say. And now I'm scanning for the date. It was 2012. So it was right on the cusp of after I finished my doctorate. So I missed it. And when I read it, you know, I was like, how is everyone in the United States, any school, why are they not teaching it absolutely everywhere? And so I wrote something on my blog, and it was so interesting because all of a sudden I got this email from a friend from Ann's sister, Rosemary, who said, I read your blog. I want to share with my sister. Is that okay? And I was like, okay. And Rosemary Murata, she has this incredible best book blogger site. So you can kind of like see all the great books that she reads. And then we connected because of Twitter. And the next thing I know, this book, Flooded, is in my mailbox, autographed, right? And then I read it and I was just enthralled. And then I thought she sent me the wrong book because of the way the story reveals itself, but I'm not going to give that away. And so I want to give it away, but I'm not going to. And so now I'm here saying that, you know, Flooded, Requiem for Johnstown is a ding, 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 ding. Awesome, awesome, awesome winner of a book. And I am so glad that we have her here on the right time. And so I'm going to introduce her as Ann Eberg, worked as an English teacher for many years before becoming a full-time writer. Flooded, Requiem for Johnstown is her fourth verse novel published by Scholastic Press. Her books, which included Unbound, Serafina's Promise, and All the Broken Pieces, have received numerous awards and commendations, including most recently, the Bank Street College Claudia Lewis Award. Mm-hmm. Ann is drawn to stories of the disenfranchised and voiceless and finds inspiration in little known or too forgotten historical incidences. As a former teacher, Ann continues to be interested in the challenges children and young adults face and endeavors to engage readers in stories which will broaden their worldview and prepare them for a global society. And they're done in verse. Okay. Over to you, Tan.
It's my pleasure to introduce Amy. Amy, I didn't ask you how to pronounce your last name or your school name. So Amy Bouch.
It is tough. So it's actually Bouch, like rhymes with couch.
Thank you. I should just have you introduce yourself. I'm sorry, Amy. Amy Bouch is a reading obsessed eighth grade English teacher at
Chartiers Valley.
Chartiers Valley Middle School near Pittsburgh. We got so excited talking, I forgot to ask you these questions. She's a Western Pennsylvania Writing Project teacher leader and the vice president of the Western Pennsylvania Council of Teachers of English. Amy's favorite part of teaching is inspiring and fostering a love of reading and writing in her students. She gets over the top excited when pairing students with books they love and encouraging students to share their writing with wider audiences. Amy enjoys reading and writing beside her students any chance she gets. When she isn't teaching, she's making her way through all of the US national parks and traveling the world with her husband. That.
And a special shout out to University of Pittsburgh, because everything is pointing that way to Johnstown in Pittsburgh. Dr. Valerie Kinlock is the incoming president of NCTE, and you have Laura Roop leading one of the strongest writing project sites out there. So we are so excited to have you here today to interview and talk with one another. So we're gonna hand it over to you to do the first writing prompt.
Okay, so for this first prompt, this really connects to, you know, the introduction of Annie Berg, but she is so inspiring. I mean, you know, and you are so inspiring in the way that you bring little told stories to a wider audience. So that inspired me to think that we should write about what are some stories that you think need told. So consider stories about yourself, your dreams, your culture, your history, and more.
I love that prompt.
Thank you. I'm so glad.
That's a great place for you two to start your interview. So I'll stop sharing my screen and leave you to it.
So then, a question to jump off from that prompt. So in the acknowledgments of your book, you mentioned how the idea and research process started whenever you did a workshop in historical fiction at Shippensburg University, where you said your brother works and you wanted to do something local to that location. So how do you, in general, for all of your books, decide which stories to tell?
Well, it's interesting because first it was my brother-in-law who works at Shippensburg.
Oh, sorry.
This is the first story that came about that way, that came in an intentional, I'm looking for a little known, literally looking for a little known incident that will appeal to a local audience. Because most of the time my stories, they may start with an idea I have, All the Broken Pieces, which was my first novel. I thought I was just gonna write a story about brothers. And so, and then I came across a quote that moved me about the Amerasian children. And so then the whole story shifted. So most often I read something that I think is fascinating. And I think, well, if you think it's fascinating, maybe other people would find it fascinating too. And so As was introduced, I was a teacher, and I guess I never really got out of that because I think to myself, oh, if I were teaching still, I would love to tell my students this. I would love to ask them, what do they think about this? So I think that's what helps me to narrow in on something that, if it's something that I have that yearning to teach, or that yearning to remember what it was like to be in a classroom and go in and say, guess what I read or what I discovered. Then I think it's a story worth telling or worth exploring. So, and with Flooded, it was different because I was actually looking for something for students that I didn't know. But then I followed the same process.
Yeah, I love that you said that if it's something that interests you, you think, you know, that other people, that it would interest them too, because it does, and it has. So, you know, the other day, my husband and I were actually, we listened to your book, All the Broken Pieces, as we were driving out to Johnstown to go visit the Flood Museum. And, you know, we were just like, wow, like just thinking about those concepts and, you know, discussing them and, you know, why it isn't taught in schools today and
right.
You know, mentioned more often. So I do love that you bring, you know, those topics and those pieces that we can pull into our classroom and have those discussions.
Yeah, that's rewarding for me to hear too, because I guess you never stop, you know, never stop caring about the kids you taught. And so I feel like I still have some sort of a connection.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you definitely do. And we all appreciate that we can use your books in our classes.
Thank you.
So then after you do decide on the story to tell, whether it, you know, comes to you, like you said, organically, like it comes up, what's your overall process for then researching the book?
Well, we'll use Flooded as an example. So I was like, really, there was this big flood and I never heard about it. And all of this happened and Carnegie was involved. You know, there was just a lot of things that should have connected this to the curriculum. And so then I just start reading and reading and reading everything that I can about it. And so there were some major books that helped in the research here. We are so blessed in this age of the internet that books that were written in 1800, I can find it online and read online. So I do a lot of reading. This was kind of a hard, because I couldn't, because as I was reading, these were real people and that I wanted to honor. And that even when I'm writing historical fiction, I'm creating the character. I'm historical fiction usually is the surrounding, the surrounding environment, the fiction, the historical fiction part comes in, but the characters are my own. In All the Broken Pieces, Matt is my own character, and in Serafina's Promise, Grace is my own character. But in here, in this book, there were real people who were lost and forgotten, and that made me not want to make it all up. So I did a lot more research for this book than I would have imagined. I mean, I went to ancestry.com and I looked up people's names, and I found out when Joe Dixon actually got his papers to work in World War I. And I mean, I was connected with these people. And even though I was making up their story, I wanted to also honor them. But I think, I guess, I tell you that I ramble a bit. I guess the real answer to your question is that I do a lot of research, a lot of reading, and taking like notes, not like organized notes on note cards, but just kind of like notes of like a name that I like or a certain incident that seems important. And that's pretty much how I start, and then certain characters will pop up, and then I'll want to know more about them.
So then that perfectly leads to my next question, because I was, you know, wondering about the characters and how you decided to tell this specific book through these several different characters, and how you decided like which character told which part of the history of the story.
Well, it actually, my original vision for this story was a kind of Spoon River anthology, where I would tell this. I was so moved by the town, and then the town, I wanted to tell the town's story. So I was going to just have like Spoon River anthologies, just people giving their soliloquies, and I wanted together for them to create the town. Mm-hmm. But I was talked it over with my editor, and I had already written a whole bunch of poems, and we decided that for kids they that wouldn't mean as much, that they would need to really be able to identify with the characters. And so I needed to choose from a vast array of characters. And if I could just backtrack a little bit, what I did was take the names of people who, real people. There's a list of the victims, and there were also directories, to take those names, and then I cross-reference them with people who were never found. So that kind of narrowed the list. The list of, there were so many people, and then these were people that were never found. And then I kind of created a story around those people. But the first family was the Fagan family, was Matt and his family, because I did a lot of background information, and I checked, you know, shipping. I wanted to know when they came over, since they were immigrants, and how long they had been there. And it's interesting, because on the list of the people who were missing and the people who had businesses in Johnstown, there's a Patrick Fagan, but there's no Matt Fagan. I looked all over for Patrick, and there's no record of Patrick Fagan. And then I started thinking, well, you know, how people give you like nicknames, just mm-hmm. you know, oh, here's an Irish guy, came over from Ireland, his name is Patrick, I don't know. But I couldn't, there was no Patrick. So, but there was a Matt Fagan. And a Matt Fagan who had five children, who had a family of five. And when I looked him up, this Matt Fagan, who may or may not be the Johnstown Fagan, he came over, when he came out, he was born, according to the ancestry records, a child was born. That's the only Matt Fagan I could find, was that a child was born on a ship coming over from Ireland. And then it just kind of, broke my heart that people, I even still now get emotional, that people sacrifice everything to come here, to build a life. And I was just so moved that I wanted their family story to be told, because that entire family was burnt, was lost. And for many of the, you know, many of the families, somebody died here, somebody died there, but that was an entire family that perished. And so I started with the Fagan, with Matt's family, with Daniel. And then, of course, I wanted Daniel to have friends. And so then from there, I pieced it around. And that's how I kind of decided how the story was going to be told.
So you mentioned the idea of, you know, it being heartbreaking, which it so very much is. As I was reading the book, I knew the flood was coming because I, you know, knew generally about, you know, the Johnstown flood. So as I was reading, and there was this point in the book where I just stopped reading and I looked at my husband and I was like, oh no, like it's coming, like it's happening, like it's about to flood. And just my heart broke knowing that these characters that I was getting to know and love, that, you know, they were, this tragic event was coming to them. Like, I'm just getting chills right now thinking about it, because I just, you know, knew it was coming. And it was just, whenever I mentioned that to some of my students today, this one boy, he was like, that's a type of, you know, irony, like you knew it, but the readers didn't. And I was like, yes, like, oh, you're connecting that.
That is wonderful.
Yes, it was. So that, you know, that was great. But yeah, so the flood then, one of the characters is the river, is the water. So how did you decide to, you know, make that a character in that book and give that a voice?
Well, it was, because I knew that I was going to lose some characters, and but not all, you know, obviously not everyone, but I wanted a voice that would be forever. I wanted a voice that would tell a story, not just Johnstown is not just the flood. And even before after I realized I was writing the book, I did more research on just like, what was Johnstown like before it was an industrial city, before they were making steel. And it was a quiet, you know, quiet town. And it just seems, and as I read about it, as the flood tells, people came and then they started to misuse me and started to, and I thought, well, the flood, she should have her voice. There is a voice there, that it's not just, we aren't just people on this planet, that this planet is here and we come and we hope to bring good to it. So I felt that she needed to tell her story too, that it isn't just the story of Johnstown and isn't just the story of the people who failed or the people who didn't. It is also the story of our world, of our earth. It was kind of a natural thing. I knew the flood was going to be a person.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you were able to share that kind of your back thinking and wanting to bring, you know, more of the world into it instead of just us as human beings. And I am definitely going to share that with my students next week when I see them in person again. So thank you so much for sharing that. As far as other characters, Willie, right? He is amazing. And I love whenever authors, you know, have a character who's a writer and really show their progression as a writer. So he goes, you know, through being like, I don't know if I can write this poem. Like, I like poetry. It means a lot. And, you know, my teacher believes in me, but I'm not sure if I believe in myself. And then, you know, he eventually does believe in himself and he creates such that beautiful poem at, you know, Decoration Day. And I guess I don't want to say any more for anyone who hasn't read it yet to spoil it. But how did you come up with Willie's story and his experience?
Well, as I was making, you know, so Daniel was my first, you know, he was a friend. He was my first character and he needed friends. And so I feel that like we kind of make, we well, when I think of my own friends and my own life, we're not all the same. And I think sometimes we think that, you know, if we're athletic or outdoorsy, then our friends need to be athletic and outdoorsy. But, you know, that isn't always how people fit in. And I wanted to kind of model that it takes all kinds of people to become all kinds of friends. And so there's these three boys living supposedly the same life, all of their fathers, according to the directory that I even researched, all of those fathers worked at the mill, but the kids didn't have to be, they're not cookie cutter, like just because their life is the same. So I wanted to have a child who saw the world in a different way. And I wanted to show that, and I hope that I show that looking at the world a different way didn't make him less of a friend or different, or because you like frogs more than you like poetry doesn't mean you can't be friends with someone who likes poetry. So that's kind of where Willie came from.
That is beautiful and perfect and wonderful for middle schoolers. So that's amazing. Again, just, you know, a wonderful tidbit to be able to share that's so true, that we can all be different people, but we need to, you know, come together and we can still be friends. And each person is kind of a little piece of the greater society, the greater good, I guess.
Yes. And they all can, they can learn from each other and can appreciate what they have to offer, because Willie saw Daniel for what he was, and Daniel, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's sometimes maybe in middle school, more than other places, you need to have permission to be friends with people that are outside or different from you in a way. So, and it doesn't have to be that way, you know, and that's pretty much where that clutch came from.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So another character that I'm really curious about. So Joe Dixon, and you mentioned him, and I can't remember now if it was in our little mini pre-conversation or during this recording, but he changes drastically from the beginning to the end and kind of his outlook on life and on people, where, you know, in the beginning, he very much looks up to Carnegie and wants to be just like him. And then kind of at the end, again, without giving too much away, he kind of changes his mind about that.
Right.
What was your purpose for this? And then I have some follow-up questions depending.
Sometimes when you're writing, things evolve. Like I just saw something about what kind of writer are you? Are you a plotter or are you a pantser? And a pantser is flying by the seat of your pants, which is pretty much, pretty much the way I write. So it kind of evolved that way, because I think that when we're young, we have these heroes that we want to be just like, and these are the things we want. And I think that life happens to us and we make discoveries, not just about the people that we admire, but also about ourselves. And so it seemed for Joe, it just seemed a natural progression. He always was a good person, a decent person. He was trying to do the right thing at all times. And from a historical perspective, let me say that Joe Dixon, there really was a 15-year-old Joe Dixon who saved his money to become, to have a newsstand. His newsstand truly did blow away in the flood, and people collected money to have for him again. I mean, he didn't go on to be a publisher. I think he became a candy maker or something. And I even came across his World War I draft, his World War I army card, whatever, registration card. But in my world that I created for him, I wanted his goodness to show and to be revealed to him as well, for him to understand him as well. And again, I think that when you're working with young people, there have to be options, it's what you start as and what you see doesn't necessarily have to be, it may not be what you discover about yourself later. So I always feel like you have to give options. Course, I wanted to be a writer since I'm four, so I know, so there goes that idea.
So then, speaking of you wanting to be a writer, and you've kind of touched on bits and pieces of your writing process, like what was that phrase you used again? The something about
flying by the seat, pantser.
Pantser, yes, yes. I love that phrase because I imagine that's a bit of me as well, just kind of, you know, running with it, with it. So could you share a little bit more about your writing process? Because from watching these, you know, Write Time episodes, I've learned that Nick Stone doesn't like revising, but Laurie Halse Anderson loves it. So kind of where do you fall in that and with the writing process in general?
I think that I love to rewrite because there's always an anxiety when, for me, I'm not for everyone else. And perhaps if I wasn't a pantser, I wouldn't have this anxiety. But for me, there's this anxiety because I fall in love with these characters. I love them. And then what? Where are they going to go? What's going to happen? So I don't ever know that there really is a story. And I often say, or I often think, if someone asks me a question, such as you just did, that I'm really not a great storyteller. Like I don't think of myself as a storyteller, like as someone who I think of myself more like, I know this sounds silly, but you know, like in The Giver, you know that book, The Giver, right? Mm-hmm. You know how he just absorbs stuff and the giver is absorbs stuff and feelings and stuff. I feel sometimes that that's what I am, that I just absorb things and feel things. And then I have to find a story to wrap those feelings around. That the story never comes first to me. Like, let me put a bunch of people in the flood and see what happens. That what comes first to me is a feeling. And so so how did I get off track with whatever you asked?
You're on track. It's just about your writing process. So this is just really interesting and insightful and kind of different than what I've heard from authors in the past. So this is wonderful. Keep going.
Well, so I have these ideas. So I have these feelings, and then I have these, and then I find characters that I develop, that I put in situations, and then I hope that I come up with this. I hope that we evolve together, the characters in me that end up staying with me like little ghosts in my head, and I hope that we can come up with some kind of something to say, that story. And that's the most nerve-wracking part: a beginning, a middle, and an end. A beginning and a climax, and an end. You know, that part is nerve-wracking. So the rewriting part, oh my gosh, that is wonderful. That means, oh, I do make sense here. I can say something here. Oh, and I can add this, and this occurs to me. So I kind of try to write as much as I can, get the story down, see that there is kind of a story, and then go back and fill in the holes and see where it could be more interesting or where it's boring and not interesting.
That is really interesting.
Thank you. There's a lot of rewriting for me.
Yeah, thank you. So then a follow-up question to that. So you mentioned about those words and how you feel them and how you just like to get them out on the page. So some of the, you know, words and phrases in Flooded as well as your other books, they hit really deep down. Like you feel them whenever you are reading them. So are those then like those first draft gems, or are they more like you revise them and take your time with them for those?
A lot of times they're the first draft stuff. Like the most of the after the first draft stuff is mostly trying to make it to kind of like, so I have all these feelings and these things, and then I try to somehow stitch them together or weave them together. So most of the really emotional stuff is probably in the first draft. And then as I say, then I find the threads that might weave them together. This was one thing that I learned when I was, when I first wrote All the Broken Pieces, was that I always used to think that writers, and maybe because this is the way I work, but not necessarily how other people work. I always used to think that writers told stories and wrote stories. But really, for me, writing is like listening and hearing and understanding how other people and other feelings come together. So I never really thought of it that way. And so I don't feel so much like I always thought that, you know, I don't know how if I'm explaining this well or how I can explain this, but you know, like when I was a teacher, one of the students has said, you know, like writers can do anything. They can make you die. They can make you live. I think that it's a terrific power that you have as a writer. You can make people live and you can make people die, but really you can't, because you're somehow stitched into another heart. And so there's a story that I'm telling, not my own story, but their story. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but for me, I'm not as much in control. Like I feel that the story goes a certain way and I can help guide it along, but I don't, you know, I try not to force things.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Like you find out who your characters are, and then right. It's your responsibility then to share their story with the rest of us.
Right. And then I listen to them, to what they're saying, mm-hmm. you know, through my research. I don't really make it up.
Right.
I really don't make stuff. I do.
Yeah, like you put it within the historical context and use your research, but you tell their story and make it beautiful for the rest of us to take in.
Well, I like to think that part of what motivates me is you'll read that like 100 people died or 1,000 people died or 2,000 people. And those are just like check marks. You know, that means to me, I guess, because I'm so anti-math that I feel like I need to take it apart. I need to break that number up and take it to its lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
it does. It does make it more. My final questions here to wrap up. So what inspired you to write novels in verse, and kind of your progression from, I noticed that you wrote children's books and then now you're kind of in the middle grade verse novels. And then with that in mind, do you have any upcoming projects or books that we can look forward to?
Well, I'm actually working on two things right now. Well, one I just submitted to an editor, and that's a World War I piece. I don't know if that will go anywhere. And I'm playing around with something else that it's too soon to tell. But I didn't always write in verse, and it's just another unknown fact that All the Broken Pieces was never meant to be in verse. And actually an editor turned it down when I did. I wrote it in verse because it was my most direct content line to the character. I find that when you write in verse, then you're really talking like that person, you're feeling that person. So like in All the Broken Pieces Begins, my name is Matt Pinn. That was him sitting on my shoulder. I felt like, you know, this is how I can tell it. But then I had an editor tell me, ask me if I would rewrite it as a more traditional novel, which I did. And I rewrote the whole thing. And it didn't turn out as well, because I was adding a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't important, like the way the clock's ticking and all these other things. So I guess verse was like a natural progression for me when I realized that if I really want to get into a character, this allows me the greatest freedom.
That makes sense. It's like, you know, cutting into the point, like just right. Take it exactly to all of those feelings and just, you know, all of that good stuff.
So we, throughout all this, Tanya and I are texting each other, and usually Tanya is the one who's like, Brian, I'm crying. Oh. And I actually, this time, because I just adore your writing. It is so profound and on a higher level of soul work that I've never experienced before. Maybe it's the cacophony of voices, and I like hearing the melodies of different voices, and you're a pro at that. And I also think about the musicality of your writing, and I've told you this before, that I could see this performed musically because the voices are so sincere. The other thing, my other comment, this is my writing note, an envelope. I'm like taking notes of like what I want to say. The other thing that I think is so amazing is I really think superintendents, principals, department heads should pick up this book and promote it as an interdisciplinary read. Mm-hmm. And you said you had the number fear, but there's so many numbers that are involved in this story. One of it being how does capitalism work, and how are communities, how are the haves versus the have nots decided? You know, because you talk to my graduate students, the history teachers are dumbfounded in my area because they've never heard of this story. And they are so pumped. They've ordered it for their schools next year. They want the English teachers to read it with them. And then I think if I was a science teacher, especially an environmental science teacher, this would be the book of the next year, because it is an environmental tragedy. It is a man-made tragedy. And that's why we're using it with the National Park Services grant next year at Weir Farm, because it is the greatest way to connect conversation from beautiful stories. That's my little soapbox. I talked a little bit longer than I normally do, but I'm serious. National Writing Project audience, NCT, anybody who listens to this, I'm telling you, get flooded and get all the broken pieces.
Thank you.
Okay. Tanya.
Well, I'm glad Brian went first, because he's right. I am the first crier always. And I was listening and thinking, I'm not going to be able to close this show because I'm going to be crying, and I won't be able to get the sentences out. But I want to thank you. I want to thank you, Amy, for your great questions. And I want to thank you, Anne, for such thoughtful responses. I feel like this is a new voice about what it means to be a writer that we haven't really heard on this show before. And this idea of writing as listening is so powerful to me. And I tell people all the time about how auditory reading is for me, and how people talk about, say to kids, you have to have a picture in your mind, but I almost never have a picture in my mind, but I can hear the characters in such a way that I even tend to dream in the syntax of the book that I am currently reading. So the sounds of language and really capturing the way characters really sound and feel is for me as a reader, a really important trait of a book. And that's one of the things that really moved me about this book. I also want to say that, because it's almost Poetry Month, that in the spring, it feels to me it's time to think about E.E. Cummings. And when you talked about being led by feelings, I was like, I'm never going to hear the poem Since Feeling Is First without thinking of you. I will always think of you now.
Wow.
When I hear that poem. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you for inviting me here. Amy, you're wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for all your thoughtful answers. I'm so excited to share them with my students. I already have a student who I told him I'd give him this book next time I see him in person, because he was asking me about it. And then I asked him if his dad, because he said his dad told him about it, like the Johnstown flood. And then I said, did he grow up here, like in our area in Pittsburgh? And he's like, he grew up in Johnstown. Oh, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm like, let's have this conversation. So we kind of stopped what we were doing. He was working on writing, but we just kind of paused for a moment so that we could, discuss it. And I told him about all of the details, Anne, that you included about the history. So
yes, oh, wonderful.
Really exciting.
I'm sorry, I know we're talking beyond.
That is perfect, actually, Amy. Yes. Yeah, I'm like, it's perfect though, because if Amy's writing out question, if you're a teacher or you're a student who's watching this, it's a great time to think about another question that Amy has for us to think about in a writer's notebook, or even to begin our own novels in verse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that question up? Sometimes the screen doesn't come up.
Oh, I know, it didn't come up again. I don't know what's happening. Amy, do you have the question memorized?
I do. I don't have it memorized, but I do have the document up. So one of the many, many takeaways from this book is the importance of humans caring about other humans. So consider what you can do to share your care with the world. So how are you, or how can you foster empathy and equity?
The perfect question.
Wow, she's good.
Thank you. That's such a compliment. Good. So thank you.
For listeners, here it is. And for people who are watching the webinar, here it is finally. Thank you, Amy. That's great. I realize I'm talking more than I can, but I have one more question. If you have time for one more question, Anne, that I feel if people pick up this book, they might also want to know. So I would like to take the opportunity to ask, and I thought of it when Amy held the book up. This novel is beautiful, but the book design is beautiful. And I know that as an author, you might not have that much input into that. I'm not sure, but I feel like publishing hasn't been like the place where there's been a lot of investment for some things. And I'm wondering what you know or can tell us about how this book got put together.
I just know that there's a wonderful team at Scholastic, and they always do wonderful things. And because I'm terrible with names, I don't remember the artist who did this, but she captured, this is like one of the best book covers, I thought, because she captures the mood and yet the joy, like everything of, she captured it all. So but authors
really— I'm gonna shout out, ready? Shout out to Hadley Hooper.
Yes, and Hadley Cooper. Marika.
Marika Costa.
Yes,
yep. Marika Costa. Nice. I mean, and seriously, I agree, Tanya. I'm like glad you pointed that out. Look how smart Tanya Baker is too.
Well, the inside is beautiful too. The way that the character who's speaking's name is down the left-hand side. Also, not to give too much away, but in the last part of the book, some characters who have perished in the flood also speak, and you notice on the first page that their print is grayed out, it's not in black. I mean, there's so many careful considerations. So I don't always tell people go buy the hardcover book, but in this case, I'm definitely saying this is a lovely investment. Not only is it so well written, but it's really beautiful.
I think it is too. I mean, I think it is too. They did Marika always does a beautiful job. And, you know, as an author, when something is captured, because I do have one or two covers that I was like, that's just not how I pictured it. But you don't really have any say, but Marika never lets you down, and her team. It's not just her, it's her team. The team is Scholastic. So. Well, this was lovely.
Thank you to the team at Scholastic. Thank you, Amy and Anne. Thank you, Brian, for being my partner in crime in this, or letting me be your partner in crime. It's always my job last to thank the viewers and listeners who join us. We're so thankful that you're here. We hope that you loved the show as much as we did, and that if this is new to you, that you go to nwp.org. Sign up for our newsletter so that you always know when the next right time will happen and you never miss one, because they are amazing, just like this was tonight. Thank you.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. NWP.